The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Prepare your heart to be encouraged. My friend, God is moving in America.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here. We are audio only, but I am sitting in Fort Worth, Texas at Mercy Culture with my dear friend, colleague, and spiritual son, Landon Schott. He and his wife, Heather, lead Mercy Culture Church in Fort Worth. We want to encourage you as we're coming towards the end of the year, especially pastors, leaders, those you've been working hard, maybe you've been fasting, praying many years, doing outreach in your communities, not seeing breakthroughs, and maybe you don't know breakthroughs happening with your colleagues. I just want you to hear some reports firsthand of churches I know, folks we've worked with, amazing things that God is doing to encourage you. Sometimes it builds hope and faith. So, Landon, welcome to The Line of Fire.
It's awesome to be here. I love you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, always great to be with you. So we can go back to how we connected in 2014. But I just want to throw out kind of the shocking, like, oh my, type of stats here. And you just turned 40, correct?
Just turned 40 this year.
All right. And is this the first church that you planted?
Yes, this is the first church I've ever planted or pastored. Been in ministry for over 20 years, but did everything but senior pastoring. That was the inner vow. I was not going to senior pastor, but the Lord had other plans. But so this is the first go-around.
Okay, so when was Mercy Culture? When did you start your first Sunday service? I knew you did a lead-up. You met with teams and, you know, for many, many months leading up. But the official first Mercy Culture service?
Easter Sunday 2019.
Okay, so 2019, Easter Sunday, so you're 4.5 years old.
4.5 right now.
Right. Over the course of a month, how many people would attend services at Mercy Culture?
A little over 7,000.
A little over seven? I didn't know it was up to that.
7,000.
Oh, okay. The children's school, you inherited, but now it's been kind of built up, transformed. How many students does that have?
320, I think, is the current enrollment in that school.
And that's K-12?
Yes.
Okay. And the facilities, this complex that God dropped into your hands, what's it worth right now, roughly?
Ballpark $40 million, something like that. It's 170,000 square feet of buildings on 17.5 acres on the freeway, 1 mile outside of downtown Fort Worth.
Okay. And during COVID, how many meals did you distribute?
I don't know the total. It was millions and millions and millions of meals. I know. I just got the numbers today. We did this year alone 9 million meals this year alone.
So this is post-COVID.
But we started our feeding program the week COVID started. I was driving to the church. We got this 2,000-seat sanctuary, and I started laughing out loud. I'm like, Lord, what are you going to do in this season? And I heard the Lord audibly speak to me and say, what's in your hand? And we had this guy in our church that was feeding people out of his garage. I said, what could you do?
You asked him.
I asked him, what can you do with the church and an army? He said, Pastor, we could do millions. And so we have done millions of meals. I think we averaged somewhere ballpark around 50,000 unique families a year that we've done for the last 4 years.
And it's meals for a whole month.
Yeah. So it's like going to Costco. I kid you not. So
there are long lines of cars, especially during COVID.
Literally hundreds of cars. They'll line up 4, 5, 6 hours before we open to get in line because we give them such an extravagant amount of food. I mean, fresh meat, protein, the bread you and I buy, organic bread, vegetables, all fresh produce, just this massive amount, like literally piling. I've been out there before and people don't even have room for it in their cars. That's how much we give them. And
you so, pray for people, minister to
them.
Oh
my gosh, people, eyes have been healed, ears have been healed. I lost track. It's somewhere between around 17 to 25 people give their life to the Lord every week waiting in line to get food. Those are about the numbers that we have. It's just, it's wild, just the extravagant love and the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. Now we're doing this at multiple campuses. In fact, I just got a text today from a thriving church in Dallas who's like, hey, we want to start doing in Dallas what you're doing in Fort Worth. I was like, great, we got a Dallas campus, we'll do it together. So it's really cool how it's even spreading.
And where does all the food come from?
So all over the place. There's massive food banks, but we have a lot of people that go to our church, and then a lot of contacts. So they'll have contacts with, you know, bread companies.
You started with what you had, a guy feeding people out of his garage.
Out of his garage.
And it just grew from there.
Yeah,
so friends, I mean, I'm eyewitness to all this. I was there one day. It actually moved me to tears to see everybody. You know, it's like a warehouse part of the building, right? It just goes right out the garage. And not only are they running and hustling, but they were so happy. It was like the privilege, and you found people that their gift was serving, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we have, through our membership, we have a discipleship program called Connect with God. And the basis of it is everyone connects with God differently. But what we've done in church a lot of times, we've tried to make everyone connect with God like the leader. But if someone doesn't connect with God like you or me, they can get lost. And instead of this joy of connecting with God, it becomes a duty to connect with God. And so if
this is how I do my devotions every day. So you do these.
Correct.
Well, I may not be wired the way you're wired.
Exactly. So like, for example, like in the Christian world, we say quiet time. Well, to some people, that means time out. Like you're being punished. So you have to go sit on quiet time and go spend time with the Lord versus maybe I connect with God through compassion. And so when I'm giving someone food and I'm giving them the love of God, I'm literally doing what Jesus said. I'm clothing and I'm feeding. I literally feel God. I connect with God and I come alive. And so that's why you see people with joy, because we're not trying to get the intellectuals to come serve in the food bank. We want the people that connect with God.
So the one with the teaching gift that wants to be studying all day.
That's not, I mean, that's going to feel like a prison to them or a timeout to them. Like they got to do something that they're not connecting with. And so we want to find how people best connect with God, help them in those lanes, and then let them run. And so that's why you see such great fruit or passion that you've seen with people that are serving there.
So once word got out about this, then businesses, others started donating food.
It just spread since, and it's thriving, and now we're trying to take it to multiple cities.
And then just a little over a week ago was the Justice Run.
Yeah.
So this is something God laid on your wife Heather's heart. So she was on, we did a show talking about this and fighting human trafficking and another area where the church is heavily involved. And I was told that it was a terrible rainy day and all that, people showed up and ran anyway. But you signed up 887 runners, was the number that I heard. So this is people running 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon.
Yep.
And then the funds being raised through this to going into fighting for justice.
Yep. All the funds for the Justice Run go to the Justice Residences. And so we're looking to break ground next year officially and start building. It'll be the largest long-term housing for survivors of human trafficking in the nation. It'll house over 100 women for long-term care, which is one of the greatest needs in America. There's a lot of people doing great stuff with awareness, but when these girls are rescued, there's literally nowhere for them to go. And so as Heather began her journey in serving our city and women and children that were rescued, we found from all these police forces that we're involved with, there's nowhere for them to go. And so they were sending them into halfway houses and in drug rehabilitation programs. That wasn't their need. They're not drug addicts. They've been imprisoned in sex slavery for years. And so this will be the first of its kind, and it's very exciting. So everything with the Justice Run is going towards that initiative.
Right. So friends, this is just some of what's happening. The church is 4.5 years old. And you know, I've been part of the journey, because when God connected us, I never had any idea that you would be planning a church or that God would do this through you. And then the school, Spiritual Leadership School, now in its third year. So today I was with the interns in the second year, the third year interns and the second year students. Tomorrow is with the first year. So we've been part of that, watched that happen, and I'm amazed with all of this. When you were in your 20s, so either doing youth ministry in a church or traveling, how was life in your 20s?
Brutal. I mean, it was horrible. I wouldn't wish my 20s on anyone. I grew up in revival and dysfunction. So I grew up in a move of God with church splits happening almost simultaneously. And really the church model that I grew up in was a church that was built around a supreme leader or a dominant leader. And so the church rose and fall based on that leader's decisions. And so I made this vow. I love God. I love the presence of God. Love seeing people get baptized in the Holy Ghost, encounter the presence of God, the move of the Spirit. But I didn't want the drama and the politics. And so I made this inner vow that I wasn't going to. And I was a part of some pretty large ministries and saw some pretty brutal behind the scenes. It's one of those things where you admire someone until you get close to them. And then when it's closer you get to them, the more you see the shortcomings and the compromises that people make. And so I went on the road for years until the Lord told me to plant this church, but I really survived my 20s. And it was really this deprogramming of just getting down to the first love of truly just loving God, wanting to please Him, and then obeying Him after He spoke to me what to do. And so that's been this journey of, Lord, what pleases You? What do You want? I mean, even in COVID, I felt like, and this wasn't the case, but when I looked around, there wasn't a lot of people staying open. I mean, we did the 2 weeks that President Trump asked us to, because I didn't feel like he was trying to shut down churches. And then our governor was like, hey, church is essential. And we just went for it. So literally we laid before the Lord as elders and asked the Lord, what do You want? He said, have church for me. And so we just did what the Lord told us to do. And so really that's been the pursuit. And so it wasn't, the journey didn't always look like what it looks like now. You know, I've heard pastors talk about either you go through challenges on the front end or the back end or the middle or somewhere. You're gonna go through hard times. And in my 20s were full of a lot of hard tests that, by the grace of God, I think we passed a lot of them.
And you had a word from God to stay open, and you encouraged others not to give way to fear. Obviously, everyone had to work this out for themselves in their own lives. Leaders had to make their own decisions. But you clearly felt from the Lord it would be yielding to fear. How many serious COVID outbreaks did you have? I mean, you must have lost a lot of people with meeting thousands, hundreds of people side by side, thousands. So did you have lots of bad COVID outbreaks?
To my knowledge, no. It's my personal opinion. I know everybody has different opinion about it. I feel like in COVID, we lost common sense. And so when someone's sick, you just go home and you get better, and then you come back when you're not sick anymore. And so we just implemented a common sense protocol. Literally, Dr. Brown, I was around thousands of people on a weekly basis. I shook hands, I hugged.
And I was in meetings with you in the midst of it, right?
and never got sick one time. I don't think I have been actually sick since I started pastoring and had to miss a day of work of being sick. And so we stayed open. We did what we always do. And you know, a lot of people ended up getting COVID. They got over COVID and then they came back to church. And to my knowledge, I think we lost one family and literally gained thousands. I mean, I had to call.
Lost many and they stopped.
One guy sent me a letter and he's like, you're going to kill people. I'm begging you to shut down your church. And I was like, hey, appreciate your concerns, but the Lord told us to stay open, so that's what we're going to do. But I actually ended up calling other pastors in the city because their members started going to our church because they were closed for 6 months to a year. And I called them. I was like, hey, dude, your members are going to our church. I think it's time to open up. And I actually saw a lot of churches in the city begin to open right afterwards.
All right, friends, I just throw some of these things out to you at the outset to say, I'm watching all this. You say, well, how? How this happened? I throw out these big things at the beginning, talked about the tough 20s, but we come back, I want to talk about some of the key foundations here that I think any church can successfully implement.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend, James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss, for some foolish reason, a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
No Pelea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Not taking any calls. This is a specially pre-recorded show. One of a number of segments, episodes we're doing to encourage you pastors, churches, leaders around America with just stories of what God's doing. I know over the years when I hear the Spirit's being poured out, it's like, it's happening? Faith is built, because it's only people God has to work through. There are no superstars. I was teaching and explaining when, you know, we put people on pedestal. I've talked about that a lot, especially in November. And, you know, when you lay hands on people and God's power goes through you and someone is touched and healed, it's like, whoa. And you look at the person like, whoa. It's like, no, you put your hand on someone. Just put your hand on your own head. Wow. No, there's no wow there. The wow is what God does. So we are in awe of what he does. But if he could use me, if he could use Landon, and he could use anyone. So the motto of the church, and it's on the walls and it's everywhere, and every service you repeat it. What is that?
Taking people from corporate encounters with God to daily personal encounters with God.
Where did that come from as a value in your life?
I grew up, like I said before, in revival and in churches function. So I grew up in the church and I watched people come and go. And it seemed like these 2-year windows where people would encounter God, they'd lose their faith, they'd fall away. They'd encounter God, they'd lose their faith and fall away. Or the parable of the seeds and the different grounds. The seed would come on different ground, and for different reasons, people would fall away either from church or their relationship with the Lord in general. The other thing I saw was that people's relationship with the Lord were built around their pastors or their leaders or just their church or some sort of movement. And so if the pastor fell, if the leaders fell, if the church fell apart, then so did their relationship with God. And so I never saw successful Christianity ever modeled unless someone had an intimate, daily, personal relationship with Jesus, the Spirit of Jesus, the Holy Spirit. And if they didn't have that, they didn't make it. And it's wild. I've worked at mega churches growing up in my 20s, and I could not tell you the discipleship model of churches I went to. Of the churches I grew up, when you'd ask the question, how do you disciple people? Nobody could tell me, oh, you listen to the pastor preach, or you tell them to read the Bible. But no one could actually tell me, this is how we're discipling people. And so when I looked back and I said, fine, Lord, I will do a church. I'll start the church that you told me to do. Then I had to look at two things. Okay, what church does God want to be at? What church do I want to attend? And what church do I think really, really impact and make a difference? And so as we're praying all of this through, the vision is, when you cut you open, what do you bleed? And for 20 years, I bleed this relationship I've had with the Holy Spirit, this intimate, personal journey that I've had with the Holy Spirit. And I tell the church all the time, you don't get to choose your supernatural encounters, but you get to choose your daily encounters. And when you spend time with the Lord, it just becomes easy to hear from him. And so if we learn how to do this, if we actually commit to doing this, it's when our faith truly comes alive. It's not going to church. It's not history class. It's not relationship through a friend, a pastor, a grandparent, someone else. It's my personal faith, my relationship with the Lord. And so we say corporate encounters with God. That's the church services where we come together as believers and we encounter God. But the goal is not a church service. They say, Dr. Brown, the average person goes to church once every 6 weeks. That was before COVID. So people rarely go to church, even the committed ones. And so if your relationship with God is around a church service, that's why the church is so weak. It's why the church is so malnourished. It's why our faith is so weak. We don't know the Bible because it's so how little we're putting it in. But if we spend time with the Lord every day, it is wild how fast you grow, how strong you get, and the impact you begin to make in the kingdom when your relationship with God is daily and it's real. So that's where we get that vision, corporate encounters to daily personal.
And when you mention the church being built on a person, there are so many pastors, very hardworking, very devoted, and it's part of their calling. It's very important for them every week to be teaching the flock, to be there at the pulpit. And that's their calling and anointing, and they're good shepherds as they do that. And you are super active. I mean, you go very intensely when you go, yet you preach twice a month?
Twice a month.
Right. So it's not for lack of sermons. I mean, you're working on sermons how far ahead?
2 years.
2 years. Right. So, I mean, I always get a kick out of that because sometimes I'm getting up to speak at the biggest meeting of my life, and I still don't know what the message is until I stand beyond the pulpit.
Well, I'm not as smart as you, so maybe I need more headway.
Yeah, either way. So I mean, your plan's systematic, but by design, you speak twice a month. Why is that?
Because when I said yes to the Lord, I said I'll build it, but why? How do I build this thing? And I heard the Lord so clearly, because again, I can't stress enough this inner vow. I had seen such a poor example of leadership over and over and over in church. And so I heard the Lord say this to me. He said, just build it around me. And Dr. Brown, when he said it to me, the heaviness, the wall in front of me of not wanting to pastor, not only was removed, but I felt this engaging or this desire that I've never had before to even do it. Because it wasn't about me being the leader or me being in charge or the buck stops with me. It's all about him. What does he want? And so really when Jesus talks about the greatest is the servant, like it was this moment where I became the number one servant of the house to build the church around him that the Spirit of Jesus wants to be at. And so for me, everything's just completely changed in that moment where it became this pursuit to build the church that the Holy Spirit wants to come. You know, as an evangelist, I went to a lot of churches and I was like the Holy Ghost guy. So they brought me in to prophesy and flow in the gifts and things like that. And I went to a lot of churches over 10 years. And I always thought that there were some churches that were just fun to be at or easy to minister, until we started this. And I remember the third time we gathered corporately before we even launched the church, and every time we went to the Holy of Holies, every time the tangible presence of God, like get goosebumps in the presence of God. And I stopped wondering if he was gonna come. Every church I ever went to, I'd wonder, is he gonna come? Until we started doing this. And I said to the Lord one day, I said, are you gonna come every time? And he said this, I always come where I'm welcomed. And when we as leaders and pastors can get out of the way, where it's not our reputation, it's not how we look, it's not about us, but it really becomes about him, his presence, and pleasing him, it is amazing what God will do when we stop making room for the Holy Spirit, but we give him the entire room.
Mm. There's a passage in Exodus 25 where God has Moses tell the people of Israel, Vasuli Mikdash, Rishachanti V'Tocham, and have them make for me a holy place, a sanctuary, and I will dwell in their midst. So there is this idea of God feeling welcome, of coming where hearts are open, and coming where there's an environment where holiness is welcome, obviously in all of our imperfection, cleansed by the blood. But he desires to be among his people. He desires to meet with us and commune with us. And these are some of the key things, and that's what draws people in. They have encounters with the Lord, and they get transformed by his presence. So it's the Word and the Spirit. It's not the Word or the Spirit. It's the Word and the Spirit working in wonderful harmony. All right, we've got a couple minutes before this next break, and I do want to get into how God gave you the building, but our relationship, spiritual fathers, I want to talk about that a bit. But just very, very quickly, before we move out of this, once a year, you're away for a month. It's like during the summer, right? So you go away with your wife and your three kids?
Yep.
Okay. Cell phone, you put that away?
Change the number.
Change the number. Okay.
I have a whole new number. No one has that number.
But and the leaders, the elders, they run the church, the other pastors. Yep. Unless there's like a life and death crisis, they run it all.
Correct.
Right. What do you do? We got a minute.
It's funny. When I first started learning how to rest in sabbatical, I thought that there was something to accomplish. And what I learned is the only thing to accomplish is being with the Lord. Scripture says, in Him we move, we live, and we have our being. And I give my absolute best to the church, to the team, to the congregation on a regular basis. And that is a month where I give my undivided attention to the Lord and my family, and I rest in Him. And I come back stronger with more vision, hearing more clearly than I ever did.
And I remember a couple of years back, you also came back with the realization, I don't need to be a pastor or to do church because I have a relationship with God. It's a calling. It's a consuming calling. It's a burden. But your identity is not found in that. Your identity is found in the Lord. So friends, every church has strengths and weaknesses. Every human being has strengths and weaknesses. But I've been so blessed to see many of the patterns here. Again, going through the hard times, going through the mistakes, going through the difficulties, going through the hellish, brutal years in the 20s, then you learn things with the goal of hopefully doing things in a healthier way. And I've seen a lot of health and vitality. We come back, we'll talk about how we met in the first place right here on The Line of Fire. Hey friends, Dr. Michael Brown here. Do you remember when people thought I was crazy when I said it's not too late for America, that God can still do something in our country, that there is going to be a pushback, a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution? And do you remember when people thought that you were crazy because you felt the same way, because you believed what I was saying and already felt it in your heart? Well, friends, that pushback is here. The gospel-based moral and cultural revolution we've been talking about for 25 years is unfolding, and we are right in the thick of it. And the Line of Fire broadcast is divinely positioned for such a time as this. Friends, you would be so gratified and blessed as I hear, if you could hear what I hear. Testimony after testimony as leaders, young people, old people, moms, dads, students, people from all backgrounds come up to me and say, Dr. Brown, you're providing a template for us. You're providing a blueprint for us. You're showing us how to do this, how to have hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. But friends, it's a joint effort. We do this together. And with your support, we can amplify this broadcast around the nation and amplify this voice to shake the nation. Join our support team today. Become a torchbearer with a dollar or more per day. Here's the number to call to sign up. 800-538-5275. That's 800-538-5275. Or go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and become a monthly supporter. Click on Donate Monthly Support. I want to immediately give you two classic books, Compassionate Father or Consuming Fire, Who is the God of the Old Testament, and Revolution, which will really show you what it means to be a Jesus follower today. Plus, you get free access to our online classes and so much more. Sign up today, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm here with my friend, colleague, spiritual son, Pastor Landon Schott, the lead pastor of Mercy Culture Church in Fort Worth. I have the joy of working here regularly. Last year, I was here one way or another every single month. This year, just about every single month. And friends, one of the things that we did during the Justice Run is we worked with our co-sponsor, Trivita, to get the products out to different runners. If you've not checked out these amazing wellness products, remember 100% of your first order is donated to the Line of Fire, and more than a tithe of all subsequent orders. Call 800-771-5584, 800-771-5584. Ask your wellness questions or go online, Trivita.com and use the code BROWN25. Gets you 25% discount, and again, 100% of your first order is donated to the Line of Fire. Okay, Landon, it was 2014, and I was on Piers Morgan talking about the Duck Dynasty controversy and issues having to do with homosexuality and the Bible. You happen to be watching. Now, you had a value of having spiritual fathers in your life before that, right? So just generically, without naming names or who is involved, what did you see as the role for that?
My definition of a father is one who freely gives. It's one that is giving away their relationship. You see this modeled in the Bible, healthy and not healthy at times. But one thing that Paul talks about is that there's few fathers. One thing that I think we struggle with a lot in the church world and in society is not only natural orphans, but those with an orphan spirit as well. But I always had a heart of a son. And so I went through struggles with my own dad, who was my father and spiritual father. And I was going through the hardest season of my life, the most challenging season of my life, full of betrayal. And I was looking for men that would that I could serve and that they would pour into me. And I think this is where a lot of people get spiritual fathers wrong, is they're looking, really looking for mentors, and they call them fathers, but they're just looking for someone to give to them. And really, it's reciprocity. It's a two-way street. I've seen the most beautiful spiritual father, spiritual son relationship are really when those are both freely giving, where there's a heart to serve and give from both angles. And it's something that God just brings together. And it's not something that you rush. It's something that organically happens. God has to speak to both sides. But I've done this a few times in my life. I feel like the Lord's been really, really good, kind, and gracious to me as he's led. And I was just watching you on Piers Morgan, and I felt a kick in my spirit. And I know you got tons of people that reach out when you mentor me. I mean, someone literally messaged me today and asked me it. So, I mean, I understand that it happens quite a bit, but I felt this kick in my spirit, and I reached out to you, and you're gracious enough to respond, and our journey started 10 years ago.
Yeah, so what happened was the email just comes into our generic email address, and it would normally just end there. You know, that we get, like any ministry of any size, you just get lots of emails, lots of requests, lots of questions and things, especially someone asking, you know, would I be a mentor in someone's life? Really, the only way that would happen is if you're in our ministry school, and even then, that over a period of years in the school and then after school, outside of school, as a grad, the relationship continued, and then, you know, then it would just be kind of a natural thing that would happen. But it made it to our administrator. And she said, Mike, I think you should take a look at this. She's, you know, she's a great administrator, but really hears the Lord. So I did, and I thought, I feel good about that. I mean, this is this whole process here. I asked Nancy.
Yeah, I get past the gatekeeper.
Right. I mean, normally it would never get this far, right? Or I would just feel good about it. But I felt to ask her, and she said, yeah, I feel okay about it. So you flew in, we got to know each other, and you were just traveling doing youth ministry, right? But you always had a value about fasting and prayer. And then major, God would lead you on fasts, and there major things would come out of that. And that's been something for the church. Now, how do you start every year at Mercy Culture?
So we start with, typically we've done 21 days. And this last year, I felt like we're supposed to do 40 days. And I don't ask the church, like, it's not a soft invitation. It's, hey, if you're a member of this church, then I'm part of shepherding you. So it's my job to help you spiritually grow. And so I'm calling the church to a fast. So if you're a member of this church, you're fasting with us. And it doesn't mean that everyone has to do the same fast, but everybody's got to challenge themselves. And so we've kind of just set the bar high every year. And this year, I felt like we're supposed to do our first, in year four, first 40-day fast. Now, I do 40-day fast every year to start the year. I actually started the year I met you. Sometimes I've done two a year in certain years. It's this journey that I've been on that is life-changing. Fasting has changed my life. I really believe that a lot of the open doors, even the story of our miracle building here, different things like that, have come through prayer and fasting. I've watched God do things, open things up spiritually, that just in the natural cannot happen. I've been a personal witness to this. In fact, a couple months ago, I was standing on the stage and I heard the Lord say, "You're standing in the fast of yesterday." And the sanctuary is packed, thousands of people, presence of God is this like holy moment. And when he said it to me, what I heard was, then I got to start fasting for tomorrow. If I'm living in the fast of yesterday, then there's fast of tomorrow to get to. Yeah. But what's been wild is it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel controlling. It's just this firm leadership of like, no, it's a challenge. It's kind of like I've worked out with you before and you're the most in shape. How old are you right now?
68.
You're the most in shape 68-year-old I've ever met. Like listeners, like this Trivita stuff works. I mean, Dr. Brown
diet first, right?
He's healthy. A beast in the gym. But you work out with, 30-year-old guys and put it to them. And that doesn't come by you not challenging yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The physical doesn't change unless you challenge. And it's the same thing with the spiritual. And there's a lot of people that are like, well, I haven't grown, or have you been the same for years? Well, it's time to go the next step with the spiritual discipline of fasting. Dr. Brown, this year, we literally had thousands of people liquid fasting for 40 days.
Oh.
And man, what happens in
this? And coming to pray at night or different times.
For the first week, we come for the whole week and pray at night. And then there's all sorts of random different prayer times, different things like that. But it is such a crucial part, I think, of what we've seen happen at Mercy Culture is this commitment to fast from the leadership all the way through the congregation.
Yeah, I mean, God does respond. It's not, you have to get out of the idea that it's a works righteousness kind of thing, or the hungrier I get, the more God's obligated to move. But once you understand it rightly, there's nothing like it.
Nope.
There's nothing that has that mountain moving power, really, as we join together with the Lord. So, and as far as our relationship, so there have been other men that God's used as spiritual fathers in your life. And to this day, this unique role I play, there are other men that play other unique roles. And this is just, so people understand, and it's my joy. You don't have to do anything for me. It's my joy to see what God's doing through you. But God's used the church to help with our Jewish ministry. I'm refreshed when I come here. We've got the studio. You're always looking for ways to bless us, but that's the heart. I'm just here to bless. You never have to do anything. I'm thrilled just seeing you and the church grow, and Heather and the work that God's doing. That thrills me. But how in particular has our relationship helped you? What has God done through this relationship that has been beneficial to you, or that, again, it's not to say good things about me. It's to just kind of explain the organic way these things happen and the fruit that can come out of it. In terms of there's no formal relationship. Even though I'm a quote apostolic elder of the church, we don't have some signed contract. It's all been organic, relational. But how has it worked out in your own life?
I would say you are one of the most impactful men that has ever been in my entire life. God supernaturally brought you into my life at a crucial time when I was no one, had no influence. I was working on my first book, our second book, Gay Awareness, itinerant minister that had father wounds, church hurts, and no covering. And how I would describe our relationship is you just loved me. I'll never forget when we were meeting in North Carolina for the first time, we sat at the hotel's restaurant.
I remember that.
And you wept over the gay community. Your tears were strolling down your face as we were eating, your heart and love for them. And I remember watching you behind the scenes cry and what I'd seen in other men behind the scenes. And I thought, this is a different man. This is a godly man. And you're one of the men that the closer I got to, the more I admired you and the more I wanted to be like you. And I used the phrase reciprocity before. But in the first season of our relationship, you just poured into me. There was nothing I could do for you. I didn't have resources to help you. You just freely gave to me. You've answered my calls. You've directed me. You've corrected me. You've spoken in my life. And I have just tried to have a heart of honor towards you. Then I get in this place with Mercy Culture, and it explodes, and we have great resources. And now I'm at a different place. And now I get to, with joy, sow back into a man that sowed into me freely when I had nothing. And so now it's, again, my turn to now start sowing freely into a ministry that I admire so much.
But you don't get off so easy because I keep sewing either way.
Well, again, that's that reciprocity. And so what I love about our relationship is there is no tally board. It's just been freely giving. And so what I try to do is I try to steward you. I try to steward our relationship and utilize the gift that you are in my life. We probably text minimum once a week, sometimes multiple times a week. We get together on a regular basis. You're always available. And what you've brought to me personally is confidence as I go and tackle some of the most challenging issues, controversial issues. You are crossing my T's, helping dotting I's as I'm going into the areas of war that I go into. There's a great confidence from a theological standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, knowing that you're behind me, you're standing with me. I never feel alone, even though pastoring can be lonely sometimes because I have spiritual fathers that stand with me. You pour into my pastors here. You pour into our leaders here. You pour into me personally. You pour into our congregation multiple times every year. And so the value that you bring, I mean, how do you even begin to quantify what you've been in my life and what you've been in the life of Mercy Culture? It's just, it's hard to even describe the gift that you've been.
I appreciate it. And it's the joy is what I see, the blessing, the favor, the smile of God, and you and Heather, everyone here, being with the students, the culture of honor that you have. But I just want to say this to everybody that is a spiritual father or mother. Sometimes you don't see the reciprocity, but you give, right? What's the reciprocity when you're changing a diaper? What's the reciprocity when you're helping a teen find their way through things? You know, you don't think of that as parents. You pour in. But spiritual moms, spiritual dads, and physical moms, physical dads, you're making more of an impact than you often know. And people do watch you. And you set an example. You'd be shocked, pastors, leaders, others, that as people have watched you and you've walked before the Lord with care and with honor, 5, 10, 20 years later, they'll tell you, by the way, that changed my life. This was so let's do what Paul did, Philippians 4:9, that he said, anything you've seen, learned, whatever I've taught you, or you've just seen in me, watching me, do it, and the God of peace will bless you. All right, we come back. We want to talk about the miracle of the building here. I just want to encourage you, friends, God's moving around the country. Why not your life, your family, your church, your city?
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend, James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss for some foolish reason a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
Nopalea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Here with my friend, colleague, spiritual son, Landon Schott, lead pastor of Mercy Culture Church. So this is the home base here, Fort Worth. You have another campus or two?
Yeah, we have a campus in Waco, Texas, in Dallas campus. Dallas, Texas, we have a Spanish campus, and then an online community with, I think there's about 500 members of Mercy Culture that live all over the country that meet in houses that watch our services online.
And then you felt led by the Lord to start a network, not a denomination, but a network of what we call presence-driven churches. In other words, the high value is the presence of God in the services, and that's a centerpiece. Again, everyone has different models. This is what you feel to be a strong biblically based model. So how many churches are now part of that network?
I believe right now there are 16 officially a part of this network.
Okay.
We just launched it this year.
Oh, got it. Okay. But then you've had meetings, conferences where people are
over
coming.
Over 300 churches have been to the gatherings.
Got it. Yep. All right. If folks are curious about that, they're listening. It's like, wow, this guy talks my language. I'd like to get to know these guys.
Go to mercyculture.com, and all the links are on the website for the Presence Driven Church Network, our Connect with God, all of the different things that we do to disciple and help other churches are all on there.
So when God laid on your heart to start this church, because I remember on the journey, you couldn't find the right home church to be based at, and you finally did. You and Heather moved, and all that. You get a house, all plan. It didn't work out.
Yeah,
it just wasn't the right match.
Yep.
It's like, and I remember thinking, this guy, it's like hardship after hardship. I remember feeling bad. It's like, when's it going to work?
Yeah,
you know, and you know, rejected here and hurt there, and I remember thinking, I could research his story. To see is like, is this, you know, because he's about a lot of hard knocks, but I believe the guy, I trust the guy, you know? And sure enough, then you get this vision that you plant a church, and then God lays it on your heart to connect with Gateway, Pastor Robert Morris at Gateway. You weren't part of that, but they took you as an intern.
They took me as an intern.
They hadn't done that before.
Never before.
Right. So you got to sit in on meetings, and they paid you to be an intern.
They did.
Right, and then they were going to help financially launch the church.
Yep, they helped us start Mercy Culture.
Right, and none of this, you didn't know this going in.
No, not a word.
Right.
No.
So you get you start to gather a team, you have monthly meetings, you're coming in, all this. And then I remember the opening meetings, good crowd, but you're using someone else's building.
Yep.
Okay, and then how old was the congregation when you felt the Lord wanted you to have this property?
So 2 years before, we had one service at Mercy Culture. I heard the Lord speak to me and tell me he was going to give me this church 2 years prior. So the same day he told me to go get Pastor Robert's blessing of Gateway, told me to get this local church pastor's blessing, and they gave me one other personal assignment for my family. It was on that day. And but you know, scripture says you prophesy in part, you know in part. There's just fragments when you hear God speak to you and different things like that. You don't know how it's all going to pan out. And so you just start obeying with what you can do. And so I started obeying to the best of my ability. And we launched, like I said previously, on Easter of 2019. And then on May 16th of 2019, I'm in this building praying. And this building seats 2,000 in the sanctuary.
So it was a fine congregation, but they'd gotten older.
Yep. And they were down just a few hundred people.
And they had the Christian school, but now difficult to maintain everything.
Correct. They were losing a lot of money every month at the Christian school. I didn't know any of this at the time. But I'm just in this building praying, and I hear the audible voice of the Lord on May 16th of 2019.
How often have you heard the audible voice of God?
I hear the audible voice of the Lord on a weekly basis. I mean, it is a regular basis, because if you talk to him, he talks back. And when you get in the presence of God, it's easy to hear him. That's what we do in Connect, is we help people find the different ways they connect with God. And for me, one of them is conversation. I just start talking to him, and he just starts talking back. It's wonderful. You know, a lot of people only go to hear from God when they need a word from God, when they're desperate. But when you just talk to them when you're not desperate, just on a regular basis, it just becomes organic and easy.
And for those that are like either shaking their head, this guy's crazy. Well, I know his heart. I know his character. But the proof of the pudding's in the eating. I see the fruit. That's one. And two, God speaks to me in many different ways. But almost always internally, when I say almost always, I've never heard an audible voice, but I've staked my life on many, 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 many things God said to me. So all for the Lord speaking, But if you don't hear the audible voice of God, don't judge yourself as unspiritual.
Yeah.
Right. So, but anyway, well, but I didn't even know, when I asked you that question, that wasn't a setup. I didn't know the answer.
Okay.
Because you referenced it. Okay. So you heard the audible voice of the Lord.
So immediately when he said, I'm going to give you this place, I said to the Lord, it will never be mine. It will always be yours. That was in the covenant I made with the Lord. The next day, I get a call from Tom Lane of Gateway, who's also one of my apostolic elders of Mercy Culture.
Executive pastor.
Yep. There. And so we sat down, and he said to me, the Lord spoke to me about your building. He told me to tell you to be aggressive. So to me, that meant fast. So the next week, I started a 40-day fast. It was my second one of the year. And I walked around the building every day for 40 days.
And you would text me. You would tell me you're going around the building.
And I told the Lord, if you give it to me, I'll give it back to you. It'll never be mine. It will always be yours. On the last day of the fast, I walked around it 7 times. I went and met with the pastor of the church. And I told him, the Lord told me he's going to give me this place. And I said, now I understand how arrogant that sounds. So the only thing that probably could wash away the arrogance of that statement is by washing your feet, may I?
Now, you texted me and said, okay, Dr. Round, pray I'm about to go in and wash the pastor's feet.
Because it could be bad.
And ask him to give us the building, which then was worth like $22 million, something like that,
They paid $27 million for it in 2020. That's what they were in it for.
All right, so $27 million. So you're going to ask him to give you, this young upstart guy with a new church, a $27 million facility. Friends, I've witnessed all this. I'm there in real time as it's happening, and he's texting me. I'm about to go.
One-month-old church plant.
Right. Okay. I'm about to go in and wash the pastor's feet. Go ahead.
So I sat down with him and told him just what I told you and washed his feet. We prayed together. And 3 months later, we purchased this building for $4.5 million.
So that was their mortgage. They said, you can have it, but you have to take over the mortgage.
So there was expenses tied to freeing up the property. And so we get this amazing miracle facility. And we owned it in December of 2019. Early December is when we purchased it, within 6 months of starting the church. Absolutely wild.
Right. And it's been a great blessing. What happened to the pastor? Does he ever show up here?
Oh, he sits on the, he struggled with his health, but he's been on the front row. His grandson is one of our staff members, is on our Dallas campus team. His great-grandkids go to the school. He's been nothing but amazing and supporting. And it's wild because he had many prophetic words over his life that he would sit in the front row and watch revival. He would watch it be full of the presence of God.
Really?
I remember when we met with our lenders, because we're only, 800 people and a few months old.
And hey, we'd like to buy this facility.
Yeah, The lender said to me, well, you're going to put up a curtain to block it off. It seats 2,000 people. What are you going to do? And I looked in the eyeballs. I said, we're going to fill it. And our first service was the first Sunday, January 2020 in the building, and it was full. We went to 2 services within the month, and COVID hit a few months later, and it just never slowed down.
And where did you get that $4.5 million from?
So we put down 20% on it. This is a crazy story. So I said the Lord speaks to me, but this is just the story. So a year before we planted the church, I was sitting in a meeting, and the Lord told me to put all of the church's savings into this company called WIF, WIF Financial. It's a Christian lending organization. So we opened the account. I called them, and I said, hey, guys, I'm going to call you a year from now and ask you for $5 million. Would you give it to me? And they laughed at me and like, well, you'll need a good down payment and one heck of a cosigner. And within a year, I called them and we had the down payment. We didn't even have to take an offering for the church. We just saved the resources. And Gateway was our backing. And the Gateway said, we back them, we co-signed for them. And so we were able to purchase this building. And I think that we've done in 4 years, $11 million of remodeling this campus and this facility. I mean, we've redone, almost every square inch. We have a little bit
to go. So you fell $11 million into debt to do it?
No, we have not. We've invested $11 million into roofs and sound systems. And this is a beautiful building, but built in the 60s and 70s. And so new ACs, roofs, carpet, bathrooms, plumbing, I mean, you name it, we've updated just about every square inch of this building.
Yeah, and the best thing is, though, one of the things you walk in and see on some of the doors, it's like this every Sunday.
Yeah.
you know, God just moving. I love to come and worship. And I get to work with fine churches, large, small, and I love being with them. God's doing many wonderful things. There's obviously something very unique that happened. And it's been especially gratifying for me, closely related, but still on the outside, because I knew you when you were still in the hard years. I knew you when you kept going through hard times. And so, again, people say, well, just happened. Well, it didn't just happen. Because back then, you had that burden. You said the year we started relating, giving yourself to fast. So I saw some of the foundations that were being laid then spiritually. Again, I had no idea this was coming. And I never really thought of anything coming. No, in other words, that wasn't my goal. Like, what can he be? It was the goal of being there for you. And so I've rejoiced in the journey and been thrilled to be part of it. It is my home away from home, being here, even the place where I stay. You know, I walk in and I always thank God for my home away from home.
I would love to encourage the listeners that are listening, when they hear a story like this, that don't let the highlight be the attendance or the size or that stuff. Let the highlight be the obedience. And if you could obey God, faithful with little things, which were my 20s and early 30s, if you could be faithful with little things, he makes us ruler over much. And so let that be the highlight. My skill of my leadership ability did not build this. This truly is a house that Mercy built. It's just by the grace of God that he did this. And I feel like our pursuit to please God and obey him allowed him to trust us with what he did. But I'd love for that to be the focus of the leaders that are listening.
Yeah. So hear that. And again, there are things, man, you know, I've been contending and crying out to God for 25 years, and now they're finally starting to happen. And I feel like I'm just getting started, going into my 70s, like, cool, now we get to really run. So wherever you are, this is an amazing story, and I wanted you to hear the amazing. But it's amazing if God's working in your congregation of 30 or 30,000. It's amazing if he's touching young people in your small group of five. So be obedient, pursue the Lord in the little, and you will see the glory of God. Great being with you today.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.